Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Level 99. I'm your host Pete, podcast about all things tech related. This episode is going to be actually a very fun and intriguing one that I'm very excited to bring to all of you. And it's going to be about Kubernetes. And with us today, we have a special guest, Ruben, who actually has his own Kubernetes service that he's going to be getting into. Ruben, before I actually get into it, I kind of want you to introduce yourself, if you don't mind, and actually kind of briefly talk about the offering, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course. Hi, Pete. Thanks for having me. I'm the founder and CEO of project and company called Kubeus, and the purpose of Kubeus is to improve the overall Kubernetes usability and help engineers to run modern cloud-native applications without disasters. And we achieve that by doing a couple of things that perfectly fit together. First of all, Kubeus comes with a dashboard to help engineers to do kind of make faster and safer decisions. Kubeus comes with validation logic, and also it comes with tools that help with troubleshooting when issues arise.
If you don't mind, in your own words, for those of the folks that are new to the episodes, to the podcast, how would you explain what containers or Kubernetes is? Like, how would you explain that to someone who might not know what it is?
Okay, I guess we have to start with containers, and it's something that you cannot run modern applications without nowadays. And fair so enough. Think of containers as lightweight VMs. So they provide isolation for processes, file system, networking, but they do not contain the layer of the operating system. It's like processes, right? It's they're based on the technology called Linux namespaces, and they're much more lightweight than VM. So usually you would have on the order of hundreds of containers running on a single machine or a virtual machine. They usually launch within seconds, sometimes sub-seconds. And because they run on top of the machine, there are lots of cool things that you can achieve with containers. For example, before when you at the times of the VMs, if you would have to pad your virtual machine with lots of supporting packages, like for example, for shipping the loads outside. Now you can have things called sidecars that can live next to your container in the form of another container that would ship the loads to the outside. Or you need to receive some certificates, some tokens that have to be rotated. You can have some other containers that are sitting next to your application logic container that would provide that details for you. Containers are usually running multiples of those on machines. And in order to manage those containers, you would have some system that would orchestrate those. And there used to be a couple of solutions, and out of those, Kubernetes became the winner, and it became the de facto standards of not only orchestrating containers, but running modern cloud native applications.
And I kind of want to see your opinion on this, because I know with a lot of folks who have been in the industry, they're seeing a shift from where containers and Kubernetes was mostly used for a R&D environment to now a shift where it's actually being utilized in for production. How do you see that shift in culture happening, and where do you see it going?
Yeah, I think we'll see more and more usage in Kubernetes. Several years ago, you would see companies and teams that co-created Kubernetes using Kubernetes. but now it basically goes mainstream. You would see Kubernetes anywhere. And it's just a matter of time until it kind of, you would see a vast majority of the applications based on Kubernetes. It doesn't mean we would see lots of legacy apps just moved on top of Kubernetes just for sake of it. But we see lots of new developments based on Kubernetes.
I do agree. I think in the past, when I got into the field seven some years ago, it was mostly kind of R&D, you treat it like kettle. It's not your, you know, the kettle versus like pet mentality. And now you're starting to see that shift, kind of what you were just saying, more towards that wider adoption. We're just saying, oh, this is actually very helpful and useful. Like if you're having an outage for production, you just terminate and rebuild a fresh environment. But the one thing I do want to say is I do very much enjoy. So I did go through the KubeVS website and your open source demo, and then I have to say it's very nice. I do like the website's very nice.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Did you develop it? Did you develop it yourself?
No. There was a group of awesome designers and engineers and animators that made it happen. Yeah, it took quite a lot of effort, to be honest.
It is very well done.
Yeah, that's how we want to approach to the problem. Kubernetes is very hard. It's a very powerful and system. It's a distributed system, and so is the way we run applications on top of it. Basically, you have an application in mind. It translates to lots of loosely coupled manifests, and several weeks later, it's very hard to make sense of what is running on top of your cluster. So this is where KubeVS comes into picture. It looks to all those manifests, and it tries to understand what is the composition of the apps that are running on top of Kubernetes. And first thing that was the part of KubeVS was the dashboard, where you would see the application, notion of the application, and manifests that are allowing your application to operate. It could be configuration portions, like config maps, services. It contains things that control how application is exposed to the outside and what resources does it access to within the cluster.
Now, if you don't mind me asking this, and if you're not allowed to tell me, it's completely okay. And as I'm looking at this dashboard with all the information that you just mentioned, how are you all gathering that information? Is it off of like an Elasticsearch in the background as it's feeding into the dashboard?
Actually, KubeVS is open source, so probably none of the things that I would tell on this podcast would be a secret. None of it. So it's completely zero config. It takes a couple of minutes to run. So it looks to the cluster. It looks to every single manifest in the Kubernetes database. And it tries to figure out how things are connected. It doesn't have dependencies to any of other products, like any metric collectors or so. So, for example, you have a pod, you have deployment, right? You have services that or load balancers that are exposing the apps or ingresses through API gateways. So it tries to emulate the logic of Kubernetes itself. And that's how it understands what are you trying to do with your manifests. If that makes sense.
It does. And is it, and from what I'm seeing, and it, since it has like all the alerting and options itself, is there also a way that it can self-heal?
It's a read-only product. I personally had been through the path of configuring things, and it's a very hard path, because the moment you start touching the cluster, you would kind of interfere with the existing ways of companies do things. So you kind of change the processes, and we don't want to go there. So what we'd want to do with KubeVS is tell users when they're doing something wrong and when they're about to do something wrong, and prevent them at the earlier stages as possible.
So to prevent the folks that love to wear that shirt, when I test my code, I test it in production.
It's a 50% joke. Lots of times we test in production. It's
curiosity, what made you want to go through the open source route for KubeVS?
think it it helps with the overall adoption. It helps with getting feedback, and it looks like to be the norm in the infrastructure and the overall the cloud native space. Users would be more prone to use and install a known product if it's open source, even though vast majority of users would never download their code and take a look what it does, but they would trust other users to do that to some extent.
I think you hit the nail on the head on the entire thing. I completely agree, and that's how I feel as well. I feel like you just took the words out of my mouth about it, because I love open source. I think it's a phenomenal area of growth, and like you said, you get that amazing engagement. A couple of my favorite tools that I love using, I've actually, well, through like forums, met some incredibly smart and talented people, because you get to learn about all of the fascinating ways of how they're deploying such tools. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I never even thought that I could do it this way. This is phenomenal. Exactly. Versus when it is a paid service, it becomes harder, because obviously they want to lock it down a lot more, and you have to go through them for those like forum type of conversations. So I definitely see where you're coming from, and I think it's a extremely phenomenal point that you just made on it.
Yeah.
And I see the growth in that as well, because as you're seeing more people like making these commits and changes, I love when you're on GitHub and you're seeing the interaction with other users who are just starting hopping in and helping each other out. And I love that the community that it builds.
Yeah, exactly. So at the early days, probably the project was infant, maybe 3 months old, and I am watching every single activity. And I woke up early in the morning, there was a notification, and first thing I saw, oh, there is an issue request. Something crashes. I thought, okay. And then I keep scrolling my mailbox. The next thing I say is, oh, there is a PR. I opened the PR on my phone. I noticed someone tries to delete maybe 15 lines of code. Uh-huh. I was furious. Who dares to delete my code? And then it turns out that somehow, I still don't know how, that a piece of code which is completely useless was copied like a couple of hundred lines below the real place where it was supposed to be. So probably some wrong paste happened in the wrong spot. Mm. And just some random dude happened to notice that and fixed it. And of course, that's happily awesome. took the change. But yeah, it was one of the kind of interesting experiences. I'm relatively new to open source, to be honest. It was my first real experience, to be honest.
That's funny. I would have felt the same. You're like, you dare to challenge me? But it's awesome to see how people like that become like this, like the community's like service matter experts too, just like that. Like they're like, hey, this doesn't look right. And they become huge advocates of the product. And it's amazing seeing that evolution of any product. And that's, I love that story. That's phenomenal. Thank you.
Of course.
Now, how do you, so let's say you are, someone just brought this tool into their company and they just set it up. How would you go about, I guess, what would be the first things you would want to do, right? Like you don't want to go straight for the validators or the rules engines, but like, what would you suggest for someone to start setting this up? Like after the install, you know, connecting it to their clusters, where would they go from there?
Yeah, of course. The rules are probably the most advanced topic. The minute you install, you would start observing what kind of apps you're running within the clusters. And there are lots of built-in validation checks available in Kubeus. You may want to start editing some of those, kind of controlling the severity or maybe disabling some. But it would immediately let you know when, if you did some typos, if there are some inconsistencies. Let's say you have some services that are referencing things that are not present, or you're accessing config maps or data keys that are not present. So it can quickly help you identify things that you might not even be aware of. And it also helps you finding things that are not used. So let's say it could be indication of you kind of didn't do a complete cleanup of your previous refactoring, or it could also indicate that you're trying to use something, but you haven't properly configured it. So you would have some dangling resources in your cluster. Before getting into the rules, you may also want to use QBS before you're about to make some changes to your clusters, just to make sure that you have a complete understanding of how your application is configured, how it's exposed to the outside, if it is, does it use some excessive permissions or not, or maybe you want to make changes to some resource which is also used elsewhere. So QBS will let you know that the changes that you're about to do, about to make, probably may have much bigger impact than you originally anticipated.
Now, with the rules engine, I've noticed that there is a template or a library of predefined rules and the option of creating your own. Have you seen folks that have created their own to kind of like contribute back into the rules library?
Yeah, this is the area that we need to do a little bit better job, and it's like right now on the top of the list in the GitHub issues. There is a library of rules which you would nowadays you have to manually contribute to the library through some through GitHub. And then to use the rules, you would have to do lots of copy-paste to integrate into your clusters. Right now, we're actively working on integrating the library into the product itself so that you can download others' rules, or you can make changes and contribute back to the community. So probably once we do that, that would significantly simplify and get more engagement from the community. As of right now, majority of the rules in the library are based on the feedback from other users, and they're right now mostly home built based on the feedback.
Now, is most of these rules that are written in JSON, or would it be like in YAML or a different language?
JSON, JavaScript. It's so the syntax is JavaScript, but it's like domain-specific JavaScript. So the way the rules are unique is they follow the same structure that you would follow on the UI. So basically you would navigate through namespaces, apps, and themes and resources that are within the app. Let's say horizontal pod auto stealers, or volumes that are mounted to my workloads, or secrets that are attached to my environment variables, or volume mounts. So you can navigate, you can write the rules the same way that you would navigate in the UI. Or you can look through things and write rules based on the way apps are exposed to the outside, from the domain, URL, service and ports, or based on which images and which image repositories you're using within your cluster. So there are different views and different ways of writing rules. And in rules, you would define which resources you would like to target in terms of the hierarchy. And with JavaScript, you would write the checking logic that you would want to implement. The really unique thing about QBS Rules Engine is that you can write rules that would consider multiple manifests. So you can write cross-manifest rules, which is super unique, because any other product for policy validation you would see in the market right now. They can only validate one manifest at a time, and they mm-hmm. don't have a complete visibility of what's going on in your cluster. And because of that, you basically cannot enforce a simple rule such as, for any application, I want to have a horizontal pod autoscaler that has at least 10 replicas. You cannot do that because it involves multiple manifests. Right. Or I don't allow exposing certain workloads that use certain images to the internet. You would have to look to the pod, to the service, and then to the ingress. So because QVS correlates all those manifests together, it lets you quickly write very complicated rule in a matter of minutes.
Now, when you were mentioning earlier about you can either have the option of going using the rules engine in the JavaScript to hit through technically like the UI method, or you can do it external through the first method, is it kind of just doing API calls as it follows through the steps?
You mean Kubernetes API calls?
Yeah, so is that how it's working when you say with the rules engine?
Yeah, not really, because Kubernetes already kind of downloads the entire cluster database into its own database that allows it to take the entire snapshot of your cluster, and it lets you quickly search things within your cluster later in a full-text Google-like search method. And also, it then can run the logic on top of the validation logic on top of that database.
And do folks have like the option, or does it natively refresh it on its own?
It runs continuously. It refreshes on its own. So as soon as there is a change, it usually picks up the changes within a couple of minutes. There is a little bit of delay. We can reduce the delay to some extent, probably to a minute, but it usually takes time to consider the entire cluster and run the cross-manifest validations. And we also save the state in a time machine. So just like in Apple, you can travel back in time. You can do the same thing with QBS. It helps a lot with troubleshooting and forensics or auditing purposes. So if something goes wrong, you can quickly go back in time and see why it was working before. What did you do to break something, or the other way around?
I was just going to ask you about that. So I guess by it pulling all of that data into its own database, it makes kind of like historical and viewing those diffs a lot, I guess, easier. Does anyone have to worry about it cleaning itself up if it gets too large, or is that something that you can, it just kind of does it on its own after like X amount of like X time, it starts kind of cleaning up old like data that's not necessary?
Yeah. It keeps last 2 weeks.
Last 2 weeks. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And for the Kubernetes open source project, it keeps everything within your cluster. So there is a MySQL database running alongside Kubernetes, and it would store it there.
That's pretty cool. That's definitely handy.
Yeah. Another cool thing is that some might argue that, we're using GitOps and there's no need to store this all this state because everything is in the history of the Git. But the issue is that it's mostly true, but there are two actors that make it a little bit harder. First of all, the operator pattern is becoming so much more popular. It's a pattern that allows a tiny piece of code to modify the state of the cluster within the cluster itself. It can be based on some other external or internal stimuli. Another issue is that you may have admission modifying controllers that would modify your manifests as they are getting applied through the pipeline. And once you start making changes to your Git repository that contains the manifest, and if you start making changes to your your mutating weapons, then it would be a little bit hard to understand what was the real state of my cluster 1 week ago or 2 days ago. So Tubius acts as an audit, and it records the facts, and you may or may not need to use it at a certain point of time. But if you need, it would be right there.
So the one thing you mentioned earlier was it can stop mistakes from happening. So how if, and then you also mentioned that it is read only. So my understanding of this, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if I am by making a change to production and I'm about to by accidentally delete an entire cluster that I probably shouldn't, is it automatically going to come in and just stop the job from running and tell you, hey, you're about to nuke an entire cluster?
No. If you're deleting the cluster, then probably there should be other ways that would prevent you from doing that. No, Tubius doesn't do that. But that's actually a recent development. It's called Guard. The purpose of Guard is that you would integrate Guard into your CI/CD, basically the CD pipeline. And before you would basically do tube control apply, you would pipe all your changes into a special script that would validate the state of the cluster in terms of the rules and validators with your changes and without. And if it happens so that the package of your changes introduces additional errors and violations, it would prevent those changes from getting applied to the cluster.
So would you say a good way of comparing that is kind of like Terraform plan, where you can run to validate? Is that kind of similar?
Yeah, think of it as a dry run.
Got it. Yeah.
Again, the biggest difference is that it would consider cross manifest violations as well. So if there is a violation, it wouldn't even go through the pipeline. It wouldn't go through the admission controllers.
And then they just get like, so does this, now I guess kind of goes into my next like series of questions, is with the CI/CD pipeline. So let's say it does with the guard, it tells you, hey, you're about to make a mistake and it stops you. Does it have the option of displaying the data or the error logs back into a different source, or does it give you the option of doing both? Like, it'll display the error message in Kubius, and you know, like the standard, you know, it can go to like Teams and emails and things like that. Like, how would it notice? I guess my question is, how will the notifications happen for the engineer to know, like, hey, you made a mistake?
Yeah, once you integrate the step into your CD pipeline, you will see the output on the CLI. Right now, it's only test based. It would show the violating changes, errors, warnings. It would also show violations that were resolved by this change. So you would get both. But as long as there is an additional error, it wouldn't let it go through to the next stage. You would also see the change package in Tubius, whether it's passed or failed. So you can see the entire change set in Tubius and issues that were kind of introduced by that change. As far as notifications, it's there is none as of right now. So Tubius open source doesn't yet integrate with Slack or with Teams. There is a Slack integration with Tubius SaaS offering, but not the open source at the moment.
Okay.
There was a recent request from one of the users. They wanted to have some more manageable, like JSON or YAML more of a JSON output for the guard, so that they can use it to kind of use the data in an automation. So we'll probably get that done pretty soon.
So I know with Kubius, I guess it can live in any cluster, and it does not need to be, for instance, in, or is it specifically for Kubernetes only? So my, like, meaning can they put it in Amazon ECS? Could it be in the Azure container services? Can it live anywhere? Because I know there's now a huge shift towards like the cloud. Is there a flexibility of it living in any environment?
Yeah, as long as it's a Kubernetes distribution, OpenShift, or any managed Kubernetes, it can run within any of those. We have another version, which is unfortunately not much maintained, but probably we'll have to keep it up to speed. It's called Kubeus Portable, and the purpose of it was to, without installing Kubeus inside the cluster, use it from the same like workstation, and it would like work similar to kubectl or k9s or similar like lens. So you would run the smaller version of Kubeus from the outside, so that you can really quickly do some diagnostics, some quick troubleshooting, and then you would close it, and it wouldn't even need to be deployed within your cluster. It doesn't have all the kind of advanced capabilities. It wouldn't have custom rules. It can validate for missing things like typos in labels, in create namings. It can validate all those things, but it doesn't have search engine. It doesn't have time machine. Its only purpose is just to quickly see what's going on in the cluster, and then you will just close it. But the primary Kubeus, it's supposed to run inside the cluster. It's supposed to monitor the cluster where you install it to. In that sense, it's pretty similar to the modern cloud native approach. Even nowadays, we start deploying CD pipelines inside the clusters themselves. If you just look to the Argo CD, for example.
So, I'm glad you brought that up, because that gives me two questions I want to ask you. So the first one is for Kubeus Portable. So I guess in a simplified way, you can think about it, and it would be, it's like a portable like sonar cube, would you say? Like it'll do the scan and then it'll just shut down, right? Saying, hey, everything checks out. It doesn't. And then, but would that be able for folks that have both to integrate with each other?
So they have the
full deployed stack of Kubeus with Portable.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as a matter of fact, we used one to debug the other one at some point.
Nice.
Yeah, because Kubeus is very cruel to debug itself, but sometimes when it doesn't work, there you need something else to help with debugging. So we would launch Kubeus Portable to quickly see what's wrong with the Kubeus deployment.
Nice, that's awesome. I mean, what's the better way of knowing if it works or doesn't? Yeah. Right, yeah. I love it. Yeah. With the current shift in organizations, they all want to be cloud agnostic, right? They don't want to be stuck to just one vendor. So they want to have Azure, Google, so on and so forth. Let's say you have a Kubernetes cluster on each. Is Kubeus able to do cross-platform reads, or is it cluster-based? So if I'm running something in, let's say, Azure, can I send that information to my Google cluster?
Yeah, no, as of right now, they're self-contained. So you would have to kind of manage each individual cluster and each Kubeus deployment separately. For Kubeus SaaS offering, we kind of got to solution of that problem a little bit. So even though you would kind of drill down into each cluster individually, but you can write policies and rules that would run on for all clusters. You can search things across clusters. So we kind of got a little bit close, but as of right now, there is no like complete end-to-end integration across clusters. So if you have, let's say, one single application that is deployed into clusters, let's say East and West regions, then you would see two separate applications in two separate clusters.
If you don't mind, would you mind walking me through how you've seen people integrate this in their CI/CD pipelines? I know you briefly touched base on it earlier, but like, how would that life cycle look for someone who's just trying to spin something up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, the Dart is a relatively new development, and we're going to have special steps like for GitHub actions and other for Argo, so that it would be more a drag and drop integration. But until we reach there, it's relatively trivial. So, for example, if you're using Helm, for example, to deploy your apps, right? You would do basically Helm template to output the contents of the your manifest that you would be applying to your cluster. And you have to just pipe it into a script, which comes from Tubeus. So what it would do, it would just package all those changes. It would write it into a special CRD in the cluster. Tubeus would pick it up, run the validation, and it would reply with a pass or fail and with some logs in another CRD. Mm-hmm. And that script would just take it and would show in the CI pipeline.
Oh.
So once we have the special step, it's literally one single line. You do the Linux pipe into of your manifests. And but once we have the special steps and integration, you wouldn't even have to see one single line at all.
Have you seen anyone take like the pass and fail notifications from Kubeus to turn it into a more, how do I say this? So let's say they do the deployment, Kubeus says it fails, and they take that logic of a fail and then they try to like modify like a full automatic like response from it. I know Kubeus doesn't give you the self-heal, but I guess what I'm trying to say is in the CI/CD pipeline, they use that logic of saying, hey, my code failed, then do this instead, like this like set a task or this pipeline instead. Have you seen something like that, or has it just been mostly of a kind of more of a development of test fail scenarios? I hope that makes sense.
It's I think it's close to the test fail scenario, because otherwise we're getting into the AI territory. Because usually engineers would develop those manifests, and if you would have some tool that would modify the manifest, it would kind of self-trigger another run of the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to have two actors of one is the human, another one is a tool to modify same set of resources. Not yet, but I guess at some point we will.
So I guess for, let's say, folks that are very new to Kubernetes, would you say this is something for them to get into, even if it's at work or a self like home server environment?
It has a lot of appeal for early Kubernetes adopters as well, because it lowers the burden of the entry to Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's only for newbies, but it has a lot of appeal for more advanced users that can leverage the framework of the rules engine. But for new engineer or even someone that joined a company that already has deployments, it can give you a bird's eye view of what's going on, how things are configured, without kind of asking people or going through different types of resources to understand how things are connected.
So when I first learned Docker, I think how most of us probably first got into Kubernetes was through Docker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember it being so challenging, at least just for me, because I didn't quite understand the concept of the stacking, the getting them to communicate with each other, and then having the storage outside of that. So I can definitely see in this aspect, it could simplify a lot of those issues that I was having, and let alone like the validators and the rules engine, because it will just definitely help you drill down in some of the issues or the more common ones. And the thing that is appealing, and like you said, even for if you're not just a newbie, but advanced, is no matter how, in my opinion, advanced you are, we all make mistakes, right? Like it happens so often. And, you know, just like this week for work, I made like a fat finger at something that I've done like 1,000 times. I was sitting there, I misspelled a word and I forgot an I, and I was just sitting there like, I'm such a dumbass. Like, why would I do that? But for this, and the fact that you can customize a rules engine and do some of these catches, I think it really does help in just a wide area. The next thing that I kind of want to get into is the where it gives you the cluster like logics. How have you seen it being implemented? Or you can explain it to me this way. How are you using it, and how are some of your clients using it?
Before I get there, can I comment on your previous?
Absolutely.
So you mentioned fat finger errors, yeah. Right? And recently we added integration, kind of the first integration with non-Kubernetes resources. Mm-hmm. So we added integration with traffic or proxy. You probably are familiar with. It looks like to be the most popular API gateway. And in traffic, if you make, let's say you're adding a new middleware or some, and you made a mistake, let's say you don't reference the middleware in the right namespace, or you don't enable cross namespace middlewares, what traffic would do, it would shut down the entire route. And the only way that you would know that, of course, your app doesn't work, but you would see one single load message in the traffic proxy. So not the best experience, but those things happen. So once we integrated traffic into the QBS UI and the dashboard, we also added the default policies, default validators to detect those errors. So if you're a traffic user and you made a mistake with middleware, you would see the routes over there, but you would see that there is an error with one of your routes, like ingress routes or middleware or TLS policy is not the right one, or it's not there. So you would get to know those things immediately. And if you're making changes using the guard, you would kind of be aware of that mistakes from happening, and you can prevent them.
And does Guard also give you the flexibility of making these customization of roles as well, or is it grabbing it through a library, kind of like what you were mentioning?
It just reruns those rules and validators on top of changes that you're about to make. So you don't write your custom rules just for sake of the Guard, and any errors that you would see in the QBS UI, Guard would use that logic to validate.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So with Guard, you would prevent bad changes from entering the cluster, but the continuous validation logic, it would recheck those things anyways.
Mm. Interesting.
Like as for an audit. So you mentioned cluster APIs?
Mm. Yes. Right?
Yeah. To be honest, I haven't used them. I think it's an awesome changes towards in that direction, because it's needed to for the infrastructure layer of Kubernetes. I think it would help a lot companies that are doing Kubernetes installation. It would help a lot for basically all cloud providers, but. I haven't used them directly.
Because I know with a lot of organizations that I have been in, the main factor, even if they don't use APIs for doing like push deployments or things like that, or make customizations, I have seen them. What is kind of cool, what I like, is if and when a CI/CD pipeline fails, then it triggers like a Jira ticket or a ServiceNow ticket for the engineers to then come back to see, oh, my job's failed over the weekend, and to have like a backlog of work to get back into. So things like that, I've always found it very helpful and useful, because I'm just like, you know, nobody wants to do anything on a Monday.
Exactly. And also there is some incident management product that mm-hmm. can help with that a lot.
And I guess we can already touch base on who's a service mostly tailored for.
Yeah. SREs, DevOps, maybe DevSecOps. So devs. Sometimes those roles are the boundary between those roles are becoming a little bit mm-hmm. more thin. Especially in the small companies where right, so devs would do lots of things, but we see a trend that even in large enterprises, app engineers are getting more involved with Kubernetes. Think of it this way: if you're an app engineer, the app fails, and you're on mm-hmm. on call, most probably you would have to get a little bit involved with Kubernetes. Let's say your readiness probe fails, traffic is not routed, or liveness probe fails. Your pods get restarted. So another reason is that devs start benefiting from Kubernetes a lot. So you can leverage products, other products that like that provide support for your applications, whether using mutual TLS or certificates. Now you don't have to use all those libraries to provide those capabilities for you. If you can just use an open source or some other product that would help you with that.
I definitely can see like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So of course it pushes the burden to another layer towards the SREs and the, but yeah, the app logic can become a little bit lighter in that sense.
I mean, with the whole SRE realm, I think that's the work that they're trying to take over from. I think traditionally it was more of a Git, like a DevOps role, kind of doing all of that, and then it kind of broke apart. So it does, you're right, it does add a different, more layer to them for them to do, but it is within, I guess, like their realm of expertise, one would say. But, mm-hmm. and I can see the benefit of having this to troubleshoot issues because it gives you exactly where something has gone wrong, the failures, and because that's the worst thing, right? If you don't have like a monitoring system and something goes down and you're just sitting there like, oh man, why? Many years ago, we were doing a Bitbucket upgrade, and it was like a transition of teams. So I had just started and we did an upgrade, but we didn't know that there was no full monitoring integration with it. So this dev team comes and telling us, you broke our pipelines, you broke our pipelines. And we're like, we didn't, that wasn't us. So trying to drill down into that was such a nightmare. But having something like this as a layer of, even if it's like of a reference, help you drill down is incredibly helpful.
At least help to know where to start mm-hmm. with. All right. Nothing worse. No, what do I do?
I don't know if you've seen that Spider-Man like meme on the internet where there are like five Spider-Mans pointing at each other. Like, what's going on?
Oh yeah.
That's like the worst nightmare. Exactly. So I guess my next question is, a lot of companies have tons of tools and their CI/CD pipeline is not completely straightforward process. I've seen some that goes from, it hits multiple layers of different services, different tools. It can call three different like containers or just three different like nodes to do a certain job or a task. And if you look at the diagram, it is actually an entire like a lifecycle flow. It's not as straightforward as most of us would think a CI/CD pipeline is. So I guess my question is, how have you seen Kubeus interact or live in certain CI/CD pipelines that are a bit more complex with a ton of other tooling involved?
Yeah, so with Kubeus integration kind of starts at the later stages of the overall CI/CD mm-hmm. pipeline. But regardless how complex it is, it consists of basic building blocks. And one of the building blocks is to apply changes to your Kubernetes cluster, mm-hmm. right? And Kubeus fits right at the doorstep of that block, where before you would apply your changes to your cluster, you can just sanity check with Dubious Guard, and then if that stage fails, of course, it would prevent the later applications of the change. You would definitely want to integrate it to your production, but you can also do that for the staging and staging cluster.
Oh, that makes it incredibly simple. Does it give you the option? Can you, like, if you bend it, I guess, to add it as a check in between, or is it a final check only?
So, you can, as many stages that you have within your pipeline. You can
put it in.
Just before, so you got your manifest, you want to apply, just do the dry run through Dubious. That's it. That's all it takes.
Interesting. That's pretty cool. Is there any other piece of advice or tips that you would want to give folks that are getting into Kubeus or want to learn more about it or interact with the open source community for Kubeus?
Yeah, of course. We're trying to build a very big community around the Kubeus, and if anyone is interested, the doors are open. We're welcoming everyone to participate. There are lots of things to do, even with just giving advices on what kind of rules would you like to validate, what kind of issues you guys are facing in your company, and what are the common issues that are happening. Just learning those would be awesome. If you want to be even more hands-on, that would be also great. There is a weekly meeting happening every Thursday at 9 o'clock. So if you want to just learn more and just tell something and ask questions, it's like office hours. Feel free to join, and the links would be there on the main README of the project. And yeah, that's, I guess, what I wanted to do.
So this was a phenomenal conversation. I greatly enjoyed it. I learned a ton, and I'm speaking on everyone else's behalf, and I probably shouldn't, but I assume everyone else has greatly enjoyed and learned something new as well. So Ruben, I want to first say thank you so much for hopping on and spending some time with me today and having this conversation with me. Thank you so much.
Pete, thanks a lot. It was a great pleasure. I hope I can get back sometime later. And have another deep dive into any topics that we find interesting.
You are always welcome back, my friend. Anytime. With that, thank you so much, everyone. And I greatly appreciate you all listening. And as always, until next time, take care.